Morning, Rabbosai. Our limud of halacha every day is a zchus for the refu of Yosef Dov Ben Chai Lehishtav Refu Shleimu B'Kor B'Sar Shechol Yisrael. So today is the last day that we'll be discussing Chodosh. I don't know what we're going to start with on Sunday yet, but something Chodosh, yeah, something new. But I left the last till the best till last. You're going to hear something today that I just never ever came across, never heard of such a thing. Yeah, how are you megayer? Yeah, how do you make a yid, if you like? How do you make Jewish? Yeah, an ear of corn,
what
grain or flour? How could you be megayer grain and flour? Listen to this. Yeah, megayer. How do you award Israeli citizenship to a bag of flour? No. So listen to this. Yeah. The everybody is moida, all the poskim are moida, that chodosh in Eretz Yisrael is noig bisman hazeh. So in Eretz Yisrael there would be hypothetically a problem of chodosh, anything that was not nishrash until the 16th of the Omer, yeah, and anything that was not nishrash until the 16th of the Omer, that means anything that was planted before then, anything that was planted after. Yeah, anything that was planted in Nisan, let's say. If we take on the 2 weeks, takes Ashrosha, anything planted in Nisan is going to be osa to eat until next year, Omer. But in practical terms, it doesn't make a difference in Eretz Yisrael, because they plant their crops there in the Choref, in the winter. Right? They don't plant in Nisan. Right? Their crops are not planted in Nisan. They plant during the winter, and then they grow during the spring, and they harvest in the summer. And therefore, in practical terms, there's very little problem of Yoshon and Chodosh in Eretz Yisrael, because they don't plant anything like within 3 days or within 2 weeks of the Omer. So therefore, in practical terms, that means hypothetically, it is Noyeg. But nevertheless, in practical terms, it's not.
So
now,
how do you...
So it isn't really a problem. It wouldn't be a problem here. It wouldn't be a problem here either.
That implies that Chodosh is actually noig in Chutz
Laaretz. Chodosh is noig in Chutz Laaretz,
no,
we said.
It implies it adds to the argument.
Okay, but you've got again. I'm sure that the Bach and all these Poskin, the Stechemed, and all
that.
The others that we discussed, they knew all that and they knew that. But what they're saying is, it is noig bisman hazeh in Eretz Yisrael. Hypothetically, but in practical terms, it's not a problem, because they plant in the winter. They plant their crops long before Nisan, and therefore there's no chodosh. Generally speaking, it's not a problem of chodosh. Now listen to this. This is the bit that I just can't get my head around. Yeah, how you megaya a bag of flour? How do you make a bag of flour Jewish? Yeah, he says as follows. Listen to this, yeah? This is, I'm quoting the Piskei Teshuvos. I've never seen anything like it in my life. But maybe you can help me understand it. Tvua oy kemach shal nochrim b'chutz loretz. So you've got a non-Jewish field in Poland, and they're growing wheat there, and they export it to Eretz Yisrael. Hamuvo le'Eretz Yisrael, which is brought to Eretz Yisrael. V'nasis iso b'Eretz Yisrael alidei Yehudim. And that bag of flour, which came from Poland... Yeah, which came from Poland, ended up in Angel's Bakery. Okay? It ended up in the Jewish bakery in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah? And Nasis Iso be'Eretz Yisrael al Yidei Yehudim. So, a Jewish bakery in Israel bought imported non-Jewish flour from somewhere else outside the country. Yesha Kostru, there are some who want to write, Sha'af Lamakilim bechodesh bechutz loretz b'shal nochim. Even though in chutz loretz we're makel, let's say like the Bach, those who hold that, in other words, the kehilas in Poland that held, there's no chodesh b'zman hazeh. We don't have to worry about it. It's fine. So, but this manufacturer in Poland has exported his flour to Israel. And in Israel, they're baking his flour into challahs in Angel's Bakery this morning. Yeah, says Bezer. Yeah, says Bezer. Someone to say Bezer lechula alma osem in atoira. We're going to say that this dough is now going to be osem in atoira as chodosh. We're talking about where it is chodosh. Yeah. Well, no, we're talking where it was chodosh. Yeah, where it was planted. Let's say. Where it was planted, let's say, in 2 weeks, the 2 weeks before Pesach,
and, in Poland,
yeah, it was planted in Poland 2 weeks before Pesach, yeah, and then it was reaped in the summer. Is reaped? Yeah, reaped is the past. It wasn't repped. Yeah, yeah, it was reaped in the summer. Yeah, and then it was made into flour, and it was exported to Israel, and then they baked with it. So it's chodosh, but it's from Poland, and it's from a goyish field, from Chutz Loretz, comes to Eretz Yisrael, and gets used in a Jewish bakery to make a Jewish dough. Yeah, he says, but there, someone to say, he says, yesh. He brings down the names of the poskim who want to say that. But the Chul Alma, now this is going to be awesome in our Torah, Al Chodosh. Why? Because it became Jewish. Yeah, with Megaya, this bag of flour, we made it suddenly Jewish. It was not Chodosh Michutz Loretz, because it came from Poland, and we're not knowing, let's say in Poland, where they're not knowing Chodosh. Bizman
Azeh. It's nothing to do with the flour, it's to do with the people.
Well, I'm just saying, Kimish Anasis Lechem Be'eretz Yisrael Alidei Yehudim. Because Jews made it into bread, therefore, this goyisha flour from Poland, which wasn't where we're not knowing Chodosh, has become Chodosh somehow in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, we're Megaya, the bag of flour. Right? We're making it into Jewish. We're putting a Nissa Chodosh onto something that we don't have a Nissa Chodosh in Chutz Loretz, but we bring it to Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael Chodosh is Noeg, but it just doesn't have to be a problem nowadays, because they don't sow in the winter, they sow in the winter, not in the summer. But if it was sown in the summer in Poland, and it was brought to Eretz Yisrael, and made into Jewish bread, it was made into a challah in Angel's Bakery, then somehow we're going to be Megaya, this bag of flour, and we're going to make it like it suddenly became a Nissa Chodosh, which it wasn't outside. So it's something that needs, my time's up, but something that needs a little bit of explanation. Very hard to understand.
Strange. Is that what they were doing?
Started at
no, it wasn't growing out. North London, Friday, Dalit, Iyar, 90th day of the Omer, 2nd of May, Rabbi Shlomo Siegel, Shlita, Oleg Rosh Ola Shechena, woe or wow to your neighbor. This week's Torah is sponsored by Family Hall, Lichvot, Sumson, and Son of Chesky Hall, Nerio, and Malcolm Neufeld, Shtichia. Chatzot place last Monday, he wrote him, Shem Nebastan, Vishrol, and Shem Lissilot, but it's Chus. השבויים והחיולים במלחמו שיחזרו לתפוצותיהם לשלום במהירו.
Okay, good morning. The Brisker Rav was once walking in Eretz Yisrael, and he met the Beis Yisrael of Gur, and I think the Rachmas Strivka Rebbe. And I'm not sure exactly how this Maaseh came about from the Rebbe. The Rebbe started telling the Brisker Rav and the Beis Yisrael the following Maaseh, which came to mind from when he was a small child. And he said that he was back in the days when he was in Cheder learning Aleph Beis. And one day the Melamed said to them, he's just going out for a few minutes. Whilst he's out, they should pair up and do chazor, go over what they've learned in terms of the Aleph Beis. The Melamed comes back in, and as he comes back in, he can hear, well, the child who would one day be the Rebbe, explaining to his friend that when you've got two yudin, when you've got two yuds, one next to each other, you've got to be careful, because that is a shame of Hashem. Not to be maske shame Hashem levatara. And he said, likewise, if you've got two yudin, one on top of the other, at the end of a pasuk, it's also the shame Hashem. So the Malamid comes over and he explained to them, the first part you were right. When you've got two yudin, one next to each other, that is taka, the name of Hashem. It's printed in Chumashim like that. But at the end of the pasuk, it's what we call the so pasuk. That was the maisa. So the Brisker Rav said, now I understand something which has always bothered me. What Peshat, I think it is perhaps a Chassidus Shavuot, he said to them the following, Shteitim Posik V'ahavtal Re'echa Kamecha Ani Hashem. He said, what is the shaykhus between V'ahavtal Re'echa Kamecha Ani Hashem? But he says, but with your story as a child, I understand. When you've got two Yudin, or perhaps it goes better with the Chassidus Shavuot, two Yidin. When you've got two Yidin, who are standing side by side. There's a sense of, call it equality, respect for one another. then Ani Hashem. That is the name of Hashem. That's Yud Yud, the two Yidden who are standing side by side. That creates, that brings Hashras Hashchina. But when one Yid stands on top of the other, he tramples upon his kovod, he puts him down, then that's a sof posuk. That's the end of their relationship, and that's the end of the relationship with Hashem.
Can you give an example of the sof posuk that we're talking about?
It means two dots. It just means two dots.
It just means the two dots.
Yes, printed in the Chumash, yeah.
Oh, I see.
From a child's perspective, he looks at it as two yud.
I thought where it was.
No. As it happens, it's mavur from a Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's actually a posuk about a nar who throws at the wall, throws an even at the wall. You can see from there, Rashi actually learns out from there that a yud, the actual the main part of a yud is taka a dot. Everything else are just the peripherals. But a yud, the definition of a yud is taka a dot. But that was from a child's perspective. In this week's parasha, I should say Tazria Metzora, we obviously learn about, as we know, the central theme is the parasha of Tzaraas, and perhaps the prime cause of Tzaraas, although there are, the Gemara in Erechin does outline various others as well, but the prime cause is that of Lashon Hara. And once one has gone through the process of Bodo Yishim Mechutz LaMachane Meshavo, being outside the camp, and then they begin and go through the process of Tahara, it says, V'tzivah HaKohen, command the Kohen, V'lokach LaMitaher Shekei Tziborim Chayez Tahereis. One should take two birds, the Kohen should take two kosher birds, two kosher live birds. And then it goes on, and we shecht one, and we dip the other in its blood, and we send away the live bird. And the Gemara says in Yuma, Samuch Beis, Amud Beis, amongst other examples, very similar to this, the Korban Talmud, it goes through various others, Shetei Tziporim tells me that lechatzchila there's a mitzvah to ensure that the two birds have a likeness in terms of their looks, size, price, etc. There should be a certain similarity between these two birds. Lechatzchila, it's not le'ikuva, but lechatzchila at least to have this likeness between the two birds. And obviously it begs the question, why? What's the message that the Torah wants to convey with this idea? What's also perhaps, I think the Mefarshim already pick up on, is rather unique over here, although it's not quite the Korban, we're not talking about something going on the Mizbeach, but it's rather unique insofar as we have something associated with Korbanos, where it actually, one of them remains alive. In other words, you find it with other things which are not the typical Korban, maybe the Arzazel, it doesn't go on the Mizbeach. But the mice we put it to death. The Pora Aduma, which is called a Chatos. You find various other things, the Egla Arufa even. But over here we have something which is somewhat of a Korban, or associated with Korbanos, and the mice is left alive, which is, the Mefarshim already, I think even the Rishonim, Alatera, pick up on that Nakuda. What exactly is the message over here? Going further, we find when it comes to the Parsha of Tzaraas by the Bais. When a house gets Tzaraas on it, so the Torah says, V'tzivo HaKohen, and the Kohen should instruct, V'chidetzu es ho'avonim, asher bohen ha'noga, they should remove the stones which have been smitten with Tzaraas. And the Torah HaKohenim, the Chizkuni brings it, but it's a Torah HaKohenim which says, from here we learn, Oy l'rosha, oy l'shcheinu. Because v'chilitzu es ho'avonim in the plural implies v'chilitzu, they should remove. Who's the they? The answer is both the person who's got the tzaraas and his neighbor. Each one where the tzaraas is, the neighbor also has to remove an even from that point. And we learn it's cornerstone. Yep, oy l'rosha oy l'shcheinu. Woe to the rosha and woe to his neighbor. The neighbor has to suffer along with the rosha. And this is obviously a yesod, this is an idea which applies not just in the parasha of the Metzorah, it's a yesod, as we'll see, which applies in other cases, Oy l'rosha, oy l'shcheinu. But why is the source? Why is the source for this yesod of Oy l'rosha, oy l'shcheinu, why is the source for that in the parasha of Metzorah? Why did the Torah, Dafka, teach us this yesod, which is very far-reaching, applies across the spectrum of Torah concepts, Oy l'rosha, oy l'shcheinu, it's not dafka by the Metzorah. Why is it placed and sourced in the parasha of the Metzorah? If we go to a Gemara at the end of Maseches Sukkah, the Gemara at the end of Maseches Sukkah tells us the story with Bilgah. Bilgah was one of the 24 Mishmaros. You had there Bilgah. Bilgah was one of the 24 divisions of Kohuna. And we're told over there that they received a kanas, a fine, a punishment, if we want to call it that, that for whatever reason, we'll see in a second what the reason was, they suffered somewhat of a disgrace. Number one, the Gemara says over there, normally speaking, when you would come in, when a new Mishmar would come in on Shabbos and you had a leaving Mishmar, and they would divide the Lechem upon him, who would divide in the north, who would divide in the south? I think it's in the north, which was seen as more of a kavod, that's the incoming Mishmar, the south would be the outcoming one, I think it's that way around. With Bilgah, whether they were the ones coming in or out, they would always be, as it were, demoted to the south. Likewise, there were 24 tabois, rings, next to the Mizbeach. Each Mishmar had its own ring where they would put the korban, the neck of the korban, under this ring in order to hold the korban in place. The one of Bilgah was always closed. In other words, they could never make use of their ring. They would always have to go and, as it were, make use of somebody else's ring, somebody else's tabas. And the Gemara says, what exactly was the reason? Why did they receive this kanas? And there's two opinions in the Gemara there. One opinion is because the Mishmar arrived late. They didn't arrive on time for their Mishmar. So since they showed a lack of value for this Avodah, for their Mishmar, therefore they suffered this kanas. And Yeshbov Ochib, Yeshbov, the Mishmar which is preceding them, which therefore had to stay on that little bit longer, they gained. They would always divide the Lechem upon him, even when leaving, always in the north. They gained from the loss of Bilgah. That's one opinion in the Gemara. The other opinion in the Gemara says, no, the reason for it is ultimately because of one young lady. Somebody called Miriam Bas Bilgah. Miriam, when the Yevonim, when the Greeks came in to the Beis HaMikdash, so she went off, she sided and unfortunately left the fold. She went with one of the chiefs of the Greeks, and she goes up on the Mizbeach and she stamps on the Mizbeach. That's right, and she says, Lucus, Lucus, which is a wolf, coming off the posse, Binyamin Ze'ev Yitrov, which refers to the fact, to the korbonos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes, and Kiviyochol, she's saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lucus, Lucus, Admosai, until when are you going to continue to take the money of Klal Yisrael, to take their korbonos, and you completely ignore them? You've gone up and disregarded their cries, which obviously this was the ultimate disgrace to the Shekhinah, and as a result of that, the whole Mishmar was punished. So the Gemara says, because of one young lady, everyone has to be punished. So the Gemara says, Hainu d'omri inshi, that's what people say. Shuto d'yonuka, the speech of a child, bashuka, in the street, when you hear the way a child speaks, whether it's for the good or the bad, oda avua, oda ime. You know they didn't get this. This is not their own figure of speech. They must have heard it at home. If that's the way she speaks about the Avodah, Lucas, Lucas, etc., you know that obviously her parents didn't speak with the utmost respect about Avodah at home. So the Gemara says, but still, that would explain why her family should be punished. Her parents should suffer. But why the whole Mishmar? And to that the Gemara says, Oy l'rosha, oy l'shchena. You're right. Maybe the rest of the Mishmar didn't speak in that way, but oy l'rosha, oy l'shchena. Once one young lady, one family has to suffer, oy l'rosha, oy l'shchena, the whole Mishmar suffers along with it. And over there, you'll find Rashi quotes this Torah's Kohanim. The source for it is from this week's parasha of the Chiditzu Es Ho'avonim, that the neighbor also has to suffer along with the Matzor. But over here, it's very difficult to understand. You see, when it comes to the case of the Matzorah, I can understand. You can say, Oy l'rosh, oy l'shcheino. No one asked you to remain his neighbor. If you can see this person is a Baal Loshon Hara, then move away from him. Sell your home, go find somewhere else to live. I can understand. So therefore, you chose to stay. You have to suffer along with him. But in the case of the Mishmah of Bilgah, what do you want me to do? I was born into this Mishmah. I didn't ask. I haven't chosen to be part of the Mishmah of Bilgah. I belong to this Mishmah because that's where my parents were born into and their parents. This has been passed down. We are part of that family of Bilgah. This is our Mishmah. What do you want me to do? Move away? I can't disown my yichus. I'm part of the Mishmah. Why should I suffer along with the rest of them? What's Peshat Oyder Rosh or Oyder Shechino over here? And perhaps the Peshat is, there's no machlokes here in the Metzius. Everyone agrees with the facts. Everyone agrees that the Mishmah of Bilgah, they arrived late. Each and every time it rolled round to their turn to come and do the Avodah, so often the Mishmah arrived late. Everyone agrees with that. Everyone agrees with the story. There was this story. It's not a question of whether it happened. Miriam Bas Bilgah, she did go up on the Mizbeach, and she did stamp on the Mizbeach and cry out, Lukus, Lukus, etc. The Machlokes in the Gemara is only, but which one of those two is the Ikka cause? Which one of the two is the main reason for the whole Mishmah suffering this Kenas? One opinion says, it can't be. It doesn't make sense because of Miriam Bas Bilgah, so everyone should have to suffer. It must be the reason is ultimately because they all came up late. They showed a disregard for the value of the Avodah, so therefore they all suffered. But the other opinion says, that doesn't explain why they should suffer such humiliation. Fine, they turned up late. Give them some techocho, teach them about the value, give them some sort of small kanas, but that forevermore, they should suffer this humiliation, that their tabas should be fixed in place, and that every time they should have to go and ask others, can we make use of your tabas? Every time they have to divide up the rechem upon him, on the side of those of the yotzin of those going out. That wouldn't be, the punishment seems to be too harsh for what they did. Rather, it must be the ikkar reason is because of what Miriam Bas Bilgah did. Now, what she did was obviously the chutzpah she'en kamoyu, to do such a thing. But why would the whole Mishmah suffer? So to that, the Gemara says, because Oyla Rosh HaOyla Shechena. If the Mishmah came up, they came up time and again, they arrived late, it shows that they subscribe to the attitude of Miriam. Albeit in a completely, completely different fashion. But it shows that at a certain level, they also don't fully appreciate the value of what they've been given. Once a person subscribes to that, then we say, Oyla Rosh HaOyla Shechena. It's true. They didn't speak the way that Miriam spoke, not like the parents. But at the end of the day, if a person does something that shows that I also don't quite appreciate the Avodah, then we will say, Oyla Rosh HaOyla Shechena. Whatever she did will be considered as if you did it as well. And therefore, if she has to suffer such a punishment, which we for sure we could understand for such an act of chutzpah, most definitely, therefore, the whole Mishmah can suffer along with her. It's very similar to Yesod Rabbi Akiva says in Makos, the Gemara says, Al-Pi Shanaim Edim, or Al-Pi Shalosha Edim, and you've got various opinions there, why the Torah needs to say two or three. Once you told me two Edim, then I know Kol Shekain three. And Rabbi Akiva says, the Yesod is to teach us that when you've got three Edim, so the third Ed could turn around and say, if they're found to be false, Kasha Zomam, they're going to be punished. So the third Ed could say, well, why should I be punished? I didn't really add anything to it anyway. No one needed my Edus. And we say, no. Al-Pi Shanayim or Al-Pi Shalosha Edim. Hanitfalin, those who join on, those who join on to those who are doing an Aveira, it's true, you're not needed. You're not the one who initiated it. But if you join on, you show and you somewhat encourage the actions, then you will be punished along with them. But says Rabbi Akiva, it works the other way around as well. If you encourage and you join on and you show your enthusiasm for those who are doing a mitzvah, even though you're not the one who initiated it, you're not really needed there. But the very fact that you tag along, you'll get the full reward along with those who are doing the mitzvah who initiated it. And the emes is, if you look at the flip side of the Gemara there at the end of Sukkah, it's very meduyuk in the flip side in the pasuk that it brings. Because the Gemara ends off, Masechta Sukkah ends off, and it says, in the same way as Oyle Rosha Oyle Shcheinai, but it also is true to say Tov LaTzadik Tov LeShcheinai. And it brings a pasuk, Imru Tzadik Ki Tov, Ki Frima Alaleyam Yechedu. And Rashi in Yeshaya on that pasuk says, Imru Tzadik Ki Tov means, Imru Lemishu Tzadik, say to the person who is a Tzadik, say to him, Ki Tov Osa, that what he's done is good. You've got to say it. By saying it, it shows I subscribe to what this person is doing. I didn't even do the mitzvah. I perhaps wasn't even there at the time. But by me saying to him, Chazak ve'emot, what you did was a great action. By doing that, it shows I'm already nitfolin loisei mitzvah. Then the pasuk says, Kiferi ma'aleleihem yechelu. The fruits of their actions. Who's their actions? We're talking about one tzaddik here. The answer is, if I encourage the tzaddik, if I show that I value what he did, then what he did is considered as if I did it as well. The two of us did it together. Nitfolin loisei mitzvah, arkaisei mitzvah. What he did, I've done as well. It works in both directions. Oy le rasha, oy le shcheinai. But it can also be tov le tzaddik, tov le shcheinai. Whatever this other person did is considered as if I did it as well. Oy le rasha. Oy is gematria 17. Likewise, tov la tzaddik is also 17. It's up to us whether you want to make it oy le rasha or tov la tzaddik. And the yesod is that if a person joins on, the Peshat is that when a person, as it were, moves away from the Rosha, he moves away from that sense of Oyla Rosha, he's Polish from the Rosha, and he says, I'm going to do the opposite now. I'm not even going to in any way be seen as an Itzfol in the Osei Aveira, I'm going to move away. Then what happens is, it becomes Toiv, and I take the good of both myself, and what you, this Rosha, what he has lost. We find various examples of this in Chazal, just to mention a couple. The Mishnah in Ovid says, the Asoro Doros, in Perakei Mishnah base there, it says there were 10 generations, Minoyach v'ad Avraham Avinu. 10 generations, says the Tana there, Lehidia, in order to make known, Kamo Erech Apayim, how patient HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Because all these generations, between Noach and Avraham Avinu, they were machisin, they were causing... they were antagonizing Kiviyochel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ad Sheba Avraham Avinu, until Avraham Avinu came along, V'kibel Sechar Kulam. And he received the reward of all of them. They all had the potential to do mitzvahs. They all had the potential to do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted from them, and they spurned that opportunity. Avraham Avinu comes along, and he says, I'm not subscribing. I'm not in any way going to be associated with what they're doing. I'm going to take a different path. All of a sudden, not only does he take the reward for his own actions, he takes the reward for all those potential actions which were lost throughout those previous 9 generations, he takes the whole lot. Likewise, and in fact, over there, the Baal Tanura says, he actually quotes this Gemara, it's Gemara in Chagiga, that says, a Rosha is notel chelkoi v'chelek chaveira, the Gehenna. That a Rosha takes both his own chelek in Gehenna, but also the chelek of his friend. Likewise, a tzaddik takes both his chelek and the chelek of his friend in Olam Habo. Every person has got a potential chelek in Olam Habo and in Gehenna. Depending on which path in life a person chooses, he can effectively trade in the other chelek for the opposite. If he chooses the path of Tzidkus, then he trades in his chelek of Gehenna to take somebody else who spurned the opportunity of Olam Habo and does a switch with that person. There are other examples of this, but let's just come back and wrap it up, coming back to our parasha. We have over here, Shetei Tziporim Chayos Tahiros. These two Tziporim Chayos Tahiros represent two pure Yiddisha Neshomis. The two of us start out exactly the same. Both of us have potential to keep Torah and Mitzvahs, to do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of us. Unfortunately, one of the two birds decides to become a Baal Lashon Hara. The Shochin, the person next to him, again, we started out identical. As we said, these two birds should be identical. We started out identical. But now, seemingly, one has taken a path of rishus, of speaking and becoming a habitual Baal Lashon Hara, and the other one just stands there and doesn't say a word. But he doesn't object. He doesn't do anything to move away. So to that, the Torah says, V'chilitzu es ho'avonim. By you staying there, by not being perish, by not moving away, it shows that it doesn't bother you enough, the way this person is behaving, then kifirima alaleim, and it's the opposite way around here, but firima alaleim yecheinu. You're going to have to suffer along with him, and it will be considered, and it's falling the oisei aveira, ka oisei aveira. And therefore the Torah says, v'shochate satzipor ho'echos. Take the one bird, this is the Baal Lashon Hara, and shecht him. This person has chosen a path of Gehenna. As for the other bird, what do we do? The Tovel, take the other bird and dip the other bird, the live bird, the person who be'etzen hasn't done anything wrong. He never spoke Lashon Hara. Dip that bird in the blood of the dead bird. As if to say, you realize what you've done. By staying there and somewhat encouraging or not objecting to the path of your neighbor, you have become, as it were, a partner in crime. You've dipped yourself in his blood of guilt. But then the Torah says, but you still have an opportunity. If you want to know what should you do, what is the tikkun? The answer is, separate. Whilst you're still alive, before you go down with this person, with the Rasha, as we said, separate. Show I don't subscribe in any way. Break that connection, that sense of shechinus with the neighbor. V'shilach esat zippor, whilst you're still alive, whilst you still retain that sense of tahara, somewhat, v'shilach esat zippor achayo apnei asodeh. Embark on a different path in life. Find the tzaddikim in the world and connect to them. Rabbi Saul Gellis, there was a book, Our Man in Jerusalem or something like that. Rabbi Saul Gellis is perhaps a famous reporter in Eretz Yisrael. And he says that he was very, very close to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Zich Tzadik, the Kodesh Livracha. He says one time he came to a chasana, and after going around wishing Mazel Tov to all the relevant parties, the Chosom, the Mechutonim, etc., he went over to the Rabbonim's table where Rav Shlomo Zalman and Yevodim Ben Chaim Lechaim, Rabbi Saul Meir Lau, were sitting, talking at the table. And he went over to Rav Shlomo Zalman and put out his hand to shake Rav Shlomo Zalman's hand. And he found that his hand was just left dangling there because Rav Shlomo Zalman ignored him. And he's waiting, nothing. And he realizes after a while Rav Shlomo Zalman is well aware that he's there and he's, for some reason, he's just ignoring him. So he goes around the table and he goes to Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau and he puts out his hand and he watches how Rabbi Yisrael Meir looks at Rav Shlomo Zalman. He looks back, he's not quite sure what to do. Do I shake his hand? Why didn't Rav Shlomo Zalman in the end, like, rather uneasy, but he stretched out his hand, he shakes his hand. The next day, Rabbi Yisrael Gedis says that he went to Shari Chesed, he went to Rav Shlomo Zalman, and he came in and he said, Rebbe, please explain what was that all about yesterday? So Rav Shlomo Zalman said to him, he said, you're a reporter? He said, yes. He said, which hand do you use to write up your articles? So he said, my right hand. So he says, knowingly or unknowingly, obviously your hand, which writes plenty of Lashon Hara, yes, maybe it's things which are in the public, maybe there are certain etterim, but amaisa, it's a kli for Aveira. He says, do you think I want to shake a hand which is a kli la Aveira? Do you think I want to be, and he didn't use these words, but do you think I want to be a shochin, I want to make the connection with that kli la Aveira? Rabbi Saul Gedis said, on the spot, he said, he understood what he was saying to him. He said, Rebbe, I'm a kabbal from now on. I'm going to change my whole writing style. From now on, I'm going to write about the history of Eretz Yisrael. I write stories of Gedolim. I'm going to step down from what I do. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman said, if that's the case, again, I'm going to use my words, it's no longer a risk of Oida Rasha, Oida Shcheino. I want to be a part of that. Tov la tzadik, tov la shcheino. He stretched out his hand and he shook his hand and gave him a bracha. The reason why this message is conveyed in the parasha of Metzora is because very often people feel this person speaking Lashon Hara, if I stand up and walk away, if I object, aren't I just going to create more antagonism? He's already speaking against somebody else, so we're just going to create yet a further feud, because we know people get very defensive when you try to be seen as being the frummy and objecting. It's Lashon Hara, and people have got all sorts of justifications. So maybe I should just keep quiet. So to that, the Torah says, you've got to understand something. Yes, the middle of bringing peace, bringing shalom into Klal Yisrael is the Enkli Machzik Brocha El HaShalom. But the most important thing is to ensure that by you bringing peace, it's going to bring HaShochin, the ultimate neighbor, the Shochin of Klal Yisrael, i.e. the Shechinah into Klal Yisrael. Remember that the Kohanim received their Esperisi Shalom, like Pinchas. It was Dafka through an act of Kanos. Whether it was following the Chet Egel, Mila Shem Eloi, whether it was Pinchas who had to go and kill Cosby and Zimri. And a person could say, this is an act of breakdown, it's an act of Machloik, it's an act of Pirud. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says no. When it comes, as the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh says, when it comes to the Parashah Metzora, you put the Dam Ho'osham on the Metzora because it's blood of guilt. That's blood of Pirud. And then you need the Shemen. When the Kohanim were inaugurated, their blood was Dam Shalomim. There was no need for any Shemen. That blood which they spilt was ultimately Dam of Shalomim. It will bring Esperisi Shalom into Klal Yisrael. By that sense of Komeicha, the two Yidden standing side by side, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Hashem, that is what's going to bring Hashoras HaShchina into Klal Yisrael. Good Shabbos.
Sorry, I couldn't come last week. I also made a shidduch.
So, we go towards the end of the sedra. There, the Kohen, as we mentioned before, he goes to check the nega. And there we're speaking about Timus. Nigei begudim, but the kohen achrei hikabes es hanega vehine loy hufach hanega es inoy. Apparently, the afflicted garment has not changed in its appearance. Hanega lepus, of course, it hasn't spread. So what was a great guden Rebbe Freim Zalman Margulies. Wrote many sfurim. Amongst them was the Sefer Shem Ephraim, Perush HaTorah. And there he said a very interesting thing. The principle of it, maybe you know, but there's a few additional appendages that maybe you don't. So the sort of the vote is that the man who is the afflicted one by the Nega Tzuras, when he would be, so to speak, given his passport stamp that he's now, Betahara would give him great cause for joy. And that would be Oinek. So the letters of Nega and of Oinek are essentially the same letters. But the question is, the Gimel and the Nun, or the Nun and the Gimel, so to speak, they remain in exactly the same place, stationary. Question is where the ayin is going to be placed. If the ayin is at the end, then it writes nega. If, however, the ayin is placed at the beginning, it's nefach le'oinek. But this poor bloke, he hasn't really made much change. So therefore, the nega is in the same place, and the ayin is at the end. So the Pusik says, "Ve'ruah koyen v'hinei lehufach hanega as einoy." The ayin of the nega hasn't changed its place to become from nega to oinek, and therefore, person remains in a state of tima. Now, the Gemara says in Eichen that amongst the many reasons which were attributed to Tzuras, one of them mentioned before was Lashon Hara, which is clearly the chief and at the top of the list. But Tzuras Ayin, a person who's got difficulty in Faginen, as we call it, is also a contributing factor to Nega Tzuras. And so the Imre Emes elaborated on the same principle, and he said, The reason that this person has not actually relinquished, allowed himself to be released from this nega tzuras is because the problem is in his eye. He has not yet come to terms, he has not yet conquered this problem of tzuras ayin. And therefore, v'ruah koyen v'hinei lehufach hanega es einoi. This one who's the afflicted one has not actually changed the properties of his eyes. And the selbe schlechte oig that he had before, he's got still, and he's still remaining with it. Mimaila, we know that his nega is not going to turn to oineg. It's going to say where the ayin remains in the same place because the ayin is still afflicted with tzuras hu ayin. For that, Pnei Menachem added noch a pitchifke. That in Emerson, the koyen, you could say that the person who's the afflicted one with the tzuras, he is the one that is totally dependent on him, and he is the one who is going to change his characteristics. And as a result of him working, then he will change his nature. But the Kohen, according to the Pnei Menachem, has got also a strong, how do you say, is an important player, and he appears and he features very significantly in all this, inasmuch that this Yid was the reporter, went to Rav Shlomo Zalman and asked him, Rebbe, you didn't give me a hand, so explain to me, tell me, what did I do wrong? And then the tzaddik told him, you should know that this hand is the one that writes in a pen, Schlechts of Yidden. So he explained to him in which way he could change. So you can see that the Kohen Be'etzam is there to penetratively look and to gaze into the person, into him, and to maybe assist him in the change of his characteristics. So he said that the Kohen is the one who is really the Ish HaChesed. Oyev Shulem, V'roidev Shulem, Karev Labrius, the person who's all the time there in the opposite of Tzuras Ayin, which is Nishvaginen. And he's got the ability to work on the one who is the afflicted one to change that Ayin. And therefore, the Lushan, when we speak about the Kobunas, the Pusik says, V'hidnei nirpu nega hatzuras min hatzorua. Now, if you think about it grammatically, it should be the other way around. V'hinei nirpo hatzurua min hanega hatzuras. The afflicted leper or metzora should have the tzuras removed from him. But the Pusik doesn't say that. The Pusik says, v'hinei nirpo nega hatzuras, that the tzuras has been healed. Tzuras is an affliction. You can't heal an affliction. You can remove an affliction. You can't heal it. He said, yeah, but if you're a Kohen and you're working on changing the actual trinas and nefesh of the person, then you are able in some way as being the tzaddik to remove that tzuras from the tzurua. So it is very much associated with the Kohen himself. And Memaile versteht mit dem Luschen that the Kohen comes along, v'ruah Kohen v'hinei lo yufach hanega es einoi. And now the Kohen assumes responsibility that I am the one that can actually influence a change on this person to remove the nega hatzuras from the tzorua and consequently the ayin in where it's supposed to be. To which the Kohen is magid adds noch a pitchefke. And he says that the Atzadikim, which when they receive a kvittel from somebody, they take a pidyon, which means a few bob. The Atzadikim, for example, where they don't take any money for a pidyon, and they just read a kvittel, and they wish the person whatever is necessary. But the Koshen Tzemaget in the what we saw and accepted Halach in Klal Yisrael, that person goes to a Rebbe and to a Tzaddik and he does give money towards that. So he said that there's a Pusik in Tehillim which we say Mitzvashem tomorrow morning by Shabbos, Hinai Ein Hashem El Yerayov, that the Eibishter's eye
kaviyuchel is towards the ones that fear him. So the Kodesh Tzemagid, let's take it in a slightly different angle. Ein Hashem is that the Rebbein Shlalim gives some of the koichos of his eye, El Yirayov, to those tzaddikim, which are his, the ones that fear him. And with the koich of that eye, and they're able to do amazing things. And therefore, he says, the person who is Lahatzil Mimuves Nafshom, he sees when the person comes in that this man, Rachmuna Ritzlon, could be destined for death this year. And he speaks to him, and his Mekavim can see that there are iniquities which are lying over his head, which portend a very, very precarious outcome during the course of the year. And he takes from him a pidyon, takes from him money. So he takes from the Muves, and he adds his ayin, and he makes two muos. Because muves, if you add the ayin, becomes the word muos. So er nimmt a bissel geld, and he's changing it. And that's touch ein Hashem el Yirayov, the Rebbein Shlulam with his eye, gives part of the koyach of that ayin to those that are fearing him, which is those tzaddikim. The answer would be lahatzil mimuves nafshom, that those people can zin adoch to see that this person is got on him lying outcome of death, and he changes it. Il chayosa meru of those people that come to him because they haven't got panusa, he's able through that koich of the ayin to mechay them. So all this comes from our famous pusik here. The koich of the ayin toiv, the ayin toiv of the koyin, the ayin and the koich of the ayin of the tzaddik. That with that ability, the kishbiat shem shbi the hatzil memuves nafshom the chayosam beruah.
Very nice. First one. This is special speaker, huh? Unbelievable.